let's address this and get it done with. The whole Joe Rogan thing.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, we're a podcast, and so by law we have to talk about this week. So much has already been said about it, and I'm sure even more will be said about it between Tuesday that we're recording this and Thursday that this is going to be released. But like Neil Young can be an idiot, and like Joe Rogan can be like dangerous. Like both things can be true. And I think that we're overall like losing that plot about this a bit. Like, yeah, Neil Young's also like said dumb shit. I mean, any like a 1,000-year-old guy that was alive in the 70s probably said the F slur, or like,
don't like, touch my potatoes.
Yeah, or like threw deli meat at like a kid with Down syndrome or something. Like,
oh my,
like all of that's probably happened, but like, it doesn't.
Neil Young
like,
looks like he's thrown Canadian bacon at a special needs child at least 3 times in his life.
Yeah, but that doesn't like obviate or like give Joe Rogan a pass. And the other thing with it all is we want to talk about like being anti-censorship and like all this shit. Remember, it's not like really censorship. Like if you do that, because it's one of those things you got to pick a side. And when at the end of the day, what we're actually talking about is like a independent company making their own choices about what content they're deciding to platform and not. And so like, yeah, like there's one aspect where Spotify spent like $100 million to get Joe Rogan on there. So like, sorry, like unless Neil Young was like, I'm coming out with Heart of Gold 2, like a weekly podcast is always going to be like music that's like 40 years old. But it's not censorship, like, and you can either talk about state censorship and whatnot, or you can talk about the free market and like what it gets to do, and they're two separate things, right? Because even if Spotify decided that they were going to deplatform Joe Rogan, they're not censoring him. All they're doing is letting the free market decide. They would do that because they would say, you know what, Neil Young is more profitable than Joe Rogan for us, and the negative backlash we're going to receive from taking this off is going to not be as bad as if we kept it on. And so they've made the opposite decision, and that's what it comes down to. It's as with everything, it's purely business motivated. But I don't want to, like, I'm sure you have a thought or two about it, Scott. I don't want to get into
We were talking about it before you came on. That's why I said, oh my God.
Well, I mean, it's been the thing in the Twitter podoverse, and even though we're obviously not like a huge podcast, like there's like this argument that people think is like, oh, once you start deplatforming or censoring one podcast and you censor all, and then there's a valid argument that like if something becomes like the norm for larger, more powerful entities like Joe Rogan, then like a podcast like us could just get like ripped off the face of the earth, because who would care? No one's going to backlash, except for, you know, maybe the government of Mali or whatever. But like, you know what I mean? But yeah,
I don't want to be responsible for another civil war in Africa because they take our podcast down. I can't have that on my hand. I have so much blood already. So
I mean, end of the day, I don't disagree. I just kind of feel like this whole conversation just seems so much like a distraction that we've kind of stopped paying attention to other things happening.
That's what everything, that's the M&Ms, Minnie Mouse, it's all a distraction.
I'm really just appreciative that in today's movie, we did have a character named Candy.
Yes.
That was described as melting in your mouth and on your hands.
Yes.
Because if that...
That's the original green M&M.
Fucking original green M&M.
Bring it back.
I mean, I personally want all candy to be sexualized.
Me too. Sexualize all candies everywhere.
You know, Swiss Mister is fine. Kit Kat's clearly non-binary because it's either or. A whatchamacallit, who knows? But yeah, the M&M thing is very, very strange. I mean, gotta be really honest. I know this is gonna be shocking to everybody. I've never jerked off to any of the M&Ms.
I'm surprised.
Give myself an M&M enema.
Yeah.
But that's beside the point.
M&M.
No, I mean, I don't know. I don't even know if any of that is like a quote unquote distraction. I think that's like putting way too much import onto the thing.
People just care too much about nonsense.
Well, yeah. I mean, it gets into the public discourse because like everyone needs like the thing to rage about du jour, but like the whole like implementation of it was purely like a marketing move. It's purely like,
oh yeah, it's not like M&M and Mars candies out there like really like fighting for, you know, women to represent themselves as freely, right, as they can, and you know, giving voice to I think the orange M&M is supposed to have I don't know, like depression, anxiety, something like that. Yeah. Which I've never, as someone of depression, anxiety, I've never identified with the orange M&M.
Orange, what?
I'm
it
definitely
should be like blue.
I'm definitely
like
the red one.
Feeling blue.
Yeah.
But like, make it make sense at least.
Yeah, like it. Yeah, that's I agree,
brown,
Steve.
That's such a stereotype, Jenna.
Okay, wait. Or the brown one because you feel like shit. Okay, you could go either way. Oh, red could be anger.
That's racist.
Yeah, no, now the brown M&M is supposed to be an independent woman of color.
Well, I don't know what they're supposed...
I just feel like I'm eating people now every time I eat M&Ms. I kind of feel like a cannibal, which is making me kind of decide that maybe human meat's really a good idea.
This has turned on them because now we don't want to eat the M&Ms.
Well, exactly. I mean,
they humanize them.
It's the same shit as fucking Raytheon making themselves have a fucking pride flag on their logo for a month once a year. Like, it's that same exact shit. It's like it's completely doing like something we talked about with Candyman, which is like it's the commodification of like specific identities. Like, that's all that it amounts to.
I really do appreciate that we had that conversation about Candyman and are now talking about candy.
Right, I know.
So we've come full circle.
Wow.
And what else is a circle? M&Ms, they're round.
Oh, my God.
Government plot right there.
You know what else
is
a circle?
Decoding it all.
What are we, QAnon people?
You know what else is a circle? The flat earth.
Once we get past the mountains and we find the, you know, the other continents that are awaiting us and where the giants live and all that, we're going to...
No, the Earth is
like
held
Lemuria?
Up by an elephant.
No, it's a turtle, I think.
It's a turtle?
I'm pretty sure it's a giant turtle.
I heard it was an octopus also. Gigantic octopus is holding up the Earth.
Well, they are aliens, so that would make sense.
Okay, well, whatever. Whatever floats your boat.
An octopus, apparently.
Yeah.
I have been playing Halo this whole time, by the way.
I know you have. This is just your new thing. God. It's something about he's got to have both sides of his brain moving.
I know. I listened to the beginning of the episode.
It works. It works.
It does work.
All right.
He will just randomly scream at some point, but he's not having a fit or anything. It's just what he does. Okay. So.
Well, it's the Fracture Tenrai mode is back again. So it's Fiesta time, baby. Random weapons, random equipment. So you can only get so mad at that. It's Goofy Boy season, so.
Goofy Boy season.
Like it's
like
always
that.
Goofy Boy season.
That's fun.
It's
fun.
Fun
season.
You know what else is fun?
What?
That we have a new theme for the month.
Oh my God! Yeah, I'm loving the themes.
It's gonna make things a lot easier, and I have so many little ideas to throw out. So I picked the first movie, but first, what are we celebrating this month? Lupercalia. That's what we're celebrating. So first, a little history.
Goody.
So in honor of the early pagans of Rome, we are commemorating their unabashed hedonism with four films that's Februarius, because we're going to go strictly Roman with everything in this next little thing. We're going to celebrate the bloody, violent, and sexually deviant holiday of Lupercalia, the annual festival of the Romans that was thought to purify their capital by warding off malefic spirits and subsequently ensuring fertility in the female population.
Nice.
Three sets of rites were performed by the priests of the Lupercai, also known as the Brotherhood of the Wolf. They were responsible.
Yeah!
Responsible for the implementation of these rituals in three locations in ancient Rome. The Lupercal Cave, said to be the lair of the she-wolf that was the wet nurse for Romulus and Remus, the purported founders of ancient Rome, the Mons Palatinus, or the Palatine Hill, the centermost of the seven peaks of the ancient capital, and the Forum Romanum, the central plaza of the city. Now, within
and the Mons Pubis.
And the Mons Pubis, absolutely. That is the most important of all the Mons. Within the heart of the Lupercal Cave, which, you know, if it's by the Mons Pubis, is clearly the vagine of ancient Rome. These Lupercai would sacrifice a goat or goats and one dog.
No! You should have kept that to yourself.
Well, you know, history sometimes is sad.
I'm leaving.
They'd sacrifice them, anoint their foreheads with the blood from the blades, wiping it away in wool soaked in milk.
That sounds like what your mommy used to do to you.
No. I was baptized in oils and spoken over to with tongues.
Okay.
In either case, myself and the ancient Romans would finish the ceremony with a bout of hysterical laughter, because if somebody's wiping shit on you, you just can't help but laugh.
And don't worry, Jenna. Back then, all dogs were pit bulls, so it's fine.
Oh, you're going to have an angry Palestinian on our hands.
Get me started.
Anyway,
when the feast was at
the height, the priests would cut strips of flesh from the goats, forming them into februa, thongs, that would then be brandished by the naked Lupercai, who would run counterclockwise around the streets of the Palatine Hill and whipping the willing womenfolk across their exposed skin. And you can guess where they whipped them, believing it would ensure pregnancy and healthy newborns. And if you are a fan of the show and do visit me at Lunar, I will obviously carry a dirty pair of underwear with me, and I will also become a member of the Lupercai and bless you should you be looking to have a child or some sort of yeast infection.
Where are you whipping these women?
I will do it wherever they ask, as long as they tip appropriately.
If you whip a woman, and you can move out, so decide.
Anyway, at the Roman Forum, the Lupercai would end their circular bout of BDSM. The men would draw names randomly from jars, performing the first key party in the history of our civilization, pairing with random women that were chosen, and assumedly listening to whatever the ancient Roman equivalent of Barry White was, and then having an orgiastic feast to follow. And then, kind of funny enough, they'd sometimes stay with the broads for a year until the next festival. So it's like the first, not only is it like the first like key party, it's the first Tinder, and it's way more successful by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
So, in honor of these horny Romans, we are celebrating the blood, beasts, and breasts that we're so fond of with vampires, werewolves, and depraved lunatics, beginning with our first film, Vamp, which I chose because I've never seen it, actually. And
I
obviously
love
neither
movie.
Of you.
Yeah, samesies.
I've seen almost every vampire movie. It's definitely hyperbole, but I'm going to keep saying it. This is among my favorites. It's weird as fuck. It's very 80s, and like the color, the lighting is like absolutely fucking absurd. So I just love everything about this movie.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with this. Jenna, I think had enjoyed it for the most part. Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing that bothered me was the Ronald McDonald scene. And typically I enjoy seeing Ronald McDonald, but not in this light.
Listen, I was just kind of hoping that after Grace Jones had the red hair, she'd come out dressed like Mayor McCheese.
I literally did not even realize that was Grace Jones. And so I like couldn't put it together in my head. And then I was like, I know that person. And then I was like, oh.
She dated Dolph Lundgren.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You were telling me lots of
cool
facts.
He's all nose. He can smell crime.
He can smell crime and vampires.
And with that, we'll play the commercial and jump on into 1986's Vamp. Now, riding the wave of popularity of the late Anne Rice's gothic debut novel, Interview of a Vampire, New World Pictures, ever the bastion of B-movie schlock, brought to life by the Pope of Pop Cinema himself, Roger Corman, who we could do an entire year about if we really wanted to, released Vamp in 1986, nearly a decade after the blood-suckingly erotic novel that, in part, inspired it. Nightmarishly lit in neon greens, purples, and pinks draped across the sleazy and tantalizing backdrops of a city allured by the eerie deviance of its working girls and criminal elements, Vamp is, at its core, a collegiate horror comedy
that is as blackly sarcastic as it is ominously threatening, teaching the fraternity-obsessed imbeciles of the 1980s and beyond that despite their better judgment, wrangling strippers is more of an occupational hazard than the Greek letters ever could be worth. Because after all, to quote our movie, they aren't frat houses. They're halfway houses for morons. We have writer and director Richard Wenk, joined by producer Donald P. Borchers, who put the script together actually in part because of Interview with a Vampire. Of all the research I did watch for this, I watched the extra features from the VHS release of Vamp, which was kind of really funny. So they wrote in Vamp in tandem. It's kind of was conceived at the start to be, as the tagline says, a frightening comedy, pulling influences from the vampire flicks of the past all the way back from Nosferatu to the critically tepid novelization of The Interview with a Vampire that I mentioned before. Now, Richard Wenk, our director, is a Plainfield, New Jersey native. He's a writer, director, and producer whose first short, Dracula Bites the Big Apple, was well-received enough that he would make his directorial debut with Vamp. Wenk is probably best known for as a writer for action blockbusters, having penned the screenplays for The Mechanic, The Expendables 2, the remake of The Magnificent Seven, and the upcoming Lethal Weapon 5.
Steve, do you know him?
Yeah, he's my dad.
You're my dad.
Plainfield's like 40 minutes away from me.
Hey, like Plainfield's is 40 minutes away from us too.
Yeah,
I think every state's got to have a Plainfield.
Does it have? I don't know how to say that. Say
large subdivisions of recently built houses and giant fields of emptiness.
Yeah.
No, there's like basically no emptiness in New Jersey until you get to the Pine Barrens.
Oh, well, the Pine Barrens is great, but I'm going to avoid the Sopranos references I really want to do right now. Additionally, now we have Donald P. Borchers, who helped write the script. He's a producer of over 30 credits, including The Beastmaster, Angel, which is, I think, one of me and Jenna's new mutually favorite movies about
yeah.
a prostitute that fights back.
Yeah.
Children of the Corn, both the original, the TV remake, and the upcoming remake, because we need to have a lot of children in these cornfields, apparently. Tough Turf, another movie like Angel about a street tough who's fighting crime while being part of it. And Leprechaun 2.
Oh, no. That's a pass for me.
Oh, you know, now you know that in March we gotta do Leprechaun
in
the
Why
Hood.
Why did I
we're
say
gonna do
that?
All the Leprechaun movies.
Now Steve's
in
gonna
March.
Be like, let's make Jenna watch stuff she doesn't like.
I mean, well, that is kind of part of the fun.
There's something about a. I don't know.
I know Steve's gonna pick the next movie, and he's gonna pick the werewolf one. But I really want to end the month on a movie that's so bad.
I thought
that
I get to pick it.
You're gonna pick a third one. There's four. We got four episodes.
Oh, okay.
But I want to end on a note. That's really, really perverted just to see if you can sit through it, but I don't want to say what it is.
Okay, fine.
Because
I'll
if
do
you
it.
Have any sort of inkling not to watch it, it'll ruin the magic.
I'll watch
it. Oh, please
the
message
movie.
Please message it to me right now.
I hate you both.
Seriously,
so
I'll
much.
Do it right now. Do it right now.
I will watch it. I'm a trooper.
We are gonna watch literally every Leprechaun movie now. That's gonna be March is all Leprechaun.
My big mouth gets me in so much trouble.
You shouldn't have.
I can't stop.
Oh,
no!
Yeah, you're not gonna have a good time.
Oh, she's not gonna have. I'm gonna be honest.
If
I didn't,
this is like a movie, like the Eyeball Murderers, like don't do that to me.
No. Just
If it's all movies about eyeballs, like I won't watch
it. It's for sure an exploitation film, and I'll say this. It's an exploitation film that was released by Troma when they first started, but it is not technically a Troma film.
Okay.
And I think if anybody's listening is knowing what I'm referencing, they're probably laughing to themselves. So
fantastic.
Anyway.
I don't think there's any eye stuff.
Okay. No, there's not any.
No eye stuff. Just all butthole stuff or something.
No, there's no
butthole stuff. No, there's no butthole stuff.
It's not that there's anything horrible
that
you're
that
seeing.
Not that I mind a butthole, but
this is true. It's just how it all comes together because it's so.
Stop talking about it. Oh. Don't you just want to surprise me?
Oh, I do want to surprise you.
Anyway, cinematography for this film, which is Vamp and not the movie I'm hoping we're going to do at the end of the month, is by Elliot Davis. He's a longtime cinematographer, cameraman, who's known for his naturally expressionistic style, using everything from desaturated color to full-on nightmarishly garish palettes, as we've seen in Vamp. He's worked for over 50 years in the industry and has worked on many well-known films, including White Oleander, I Am Sam, Lords of Dogtown, and Twilight.
I don't like Twilight. Ugh. It's a terrible movies.
I'm really glad you're not a Twilight girl.
No. One time someone was like, oh my god, will you watch Twilight with me? I was like, okay. And I was just like, this girl's annoying. Whatever her name is.
Her name is Kristen Stewart.
Annoying.
And yeah, Robert Pattinson, who after he was done being a vampire, went to work at a lighthouse.
Annoying. Like, I just... They don't do, like, it's just like limp dick energy for me. It's a pass.
Well, saying it's for more or less women, would the opposite of limp dick be dry puss?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dry puss.
Dusty puss. Dusty
yeah,
puss
dusty,
energy.
Yeah.
I don't like any of that.
Like,
I don't like any of that either. That's why we're not going to ever talk about Twilight. Music is by Jonathan Elias, a career composer and record producer known for his soundtracks as well as his commercial jingles.
The beginning was really cool. I really liked the music in the beginning and the intro.
I got some fun facts about the music as well when we get to it. So while still attending Bennington College in Vermont, Mr. Elias composed a trailer score for Ridley Scott's Alien, following up his first taste of success with trailer scores for several blockbusters of the 80s, including Blade Runner and Back to the Future. So you can probably guess the guy was pretty successful from the start and still is. He additionally produced a handful of records, including Duran Duran's Big Thing and Grace Jones' Bulletproof Heart. And my little fun fact is the song that she dances to during her very trippy, surreal dance thing was actually an unreleased song, but they did put a version on that album from that dance thing. It's a completely different sounding from that, but... we'll talk a little bit about Grace Jones because she's pretty much like one of the coolest people that's ever lived, yeah. I think. Like, very prolific, and she did an awesome horror movie to boot. To get back to Elias, though, he collaborated with Wenk and Borchers on several projects other than Vamp, including Children of the Corn, Tough Turf, Two Moon Junction, and Leprechaun 2. Yeah, these guys like to work together on Leprechaun 2, apparently.
He also, I'm looking this up and seeing now. He also did the score for a movie that we seemingly talk about a lot, which is
like
the
RoboCop.
No, the 2007 Pathfinder movie with Carl Urban.
Oh yeah,
Pathfinder: Vikings. Legend of the Ghost Warrior. Yeah, it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. Like, not even like barely even.
I remember
funny,
being
bad.
Very excited when that got to the video store that was by my house.
Yeah, dude, me
out.
Too.
And then I watched it and realized maybe I don't like Vikings that much, but it is kind of fun. I kind of want to rewatch it now. I hope the Northman's as good as Pathfinder, honestly.
I don't
spit it out.
Just sucking the life out of Steve right
yeah,
now.
That's just hard. That just did psychic damage to me.
In terms of budget and box office, little strange how they managed their money for this. It cost $3.3 million. It made $4.9 million. But for some reason, they did not really give any budget towards a lot of the costumes. So Grace Jones actually either had friends come and help do it pro bono, or I think in some parts did it herself. So I don't know where $3.3 million went, all things considered,
yeah,
because that's quite a budget for a movie.
The costume, what they were wearing, you know, the dudes and then the dancers. I mean, they had really cool, interesting stuff. Jerry Seinfeld's dad's friend, his outfit was awesome.
Oh, you mean Sandy Baron?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. That's like the one thing I thought was really cool about the whole movie. I was like, ooh, love that, love that.
Yeah,
would wear that.
I it's weird to hear $3.3 million, which is still a lot of money for a movie back then, and then not having enough to make Grace Jones look cool. So
yeah,
clearly she did.
Yeah.
And I will explain later how she did, because that's actually kind of a cool little art history
fun fact, but we should probably talk about the cast in order to get to that. So joining us, we have Chris Makepeace as Keith, a college student that, despite his objections to dealing with a fraternity, would prefer their living arrangements to those of the dorms they live in. Mark Peace is a Canadian-born actor, retired seemingly as of 2001. He's done both kind of dramatic roles and screwball roles. He was in My Bodyguard and Meatballs with the classic Bill Murray. We got Robert Russler as AJ, Keith's best friend and doormate. He's the muscle to Keith's wit, so to speak. And after getting invited for a private dance in the back room of the After Dark Club, finds himself becoming a meal for the mysterious Katrina and unwillingly becoming what can only be described as a very, very, very unwilling member of the Living Dead. He's portrayed by the longtime actor Robert Russler, who most of you, if you're listening to a horror podcast, will recognize as Grady from Nightmare on Elm Street 2. And I believe he was Max in Weird Science, and he was in Jacob's Wife as well.
Well, who was he in Jacob's Wife? Because I was trying to figure that out.
Tom, I think he's the guy that she was going to have the affair with.
Oh.
Yeah. I didn't recognize that either. I mean,
you last night in bed, you were like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I wasn't. I mean, he's aged pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean.
He's cute.
It's fine. I thought the stripper in leather is pretty cute, too.
Yeah, I know.
Finishing off our collegiate students, we have Getty Watanabe as Duncan, a perpetual dweeb desperate for friendship and in possession of a cherry red Cadillac needed by Keith and AJ to procure the stripper that is supposedly required for admittance into the frat.
I love Duncan. Oh my God.
I don't know if I've ever seen a character in a horror movie that I've identified with so much.
Yeah.
From like the way he dresses to just...
See, when he was singing the songs about like, I'm going to see naked women. I was like, that literally sounds like Scott all day long. All he does is make up songs about what he's doing. And I was like, that's Scott. Even like the outfit, I was like, Scott would wear that when he's old.
His shirt, not the suit jacket, because I would never willingly wear.
The shirt he was wearing.
But the shirt, I really would love to have
fantastic.
That shirt.
Fantastic. We should try to find that.
Absolutely. Duncan is, like I said, played by Getty Watanabe, a beloved 80s comedic actor known for his terribly typecast roles as Long Duk Dong in 16 Candles, and he voiced Ling in Mulan. He was also the nurse in ER, who I am pretty sure was called Yoshi, because, of course, he has to play...
I knew his voice sounded familiar, but I just, like, couldn't, you know...
Now, Steve pointed out in last episode when we were kind of talking about that we were going to do this movie that they did a really nice job of like not making him the token Asian guy.
Oh, no, not at all. He just was a dork.
But to counteract that positivity, I would like to remind everyone that the Asian stripper was listed in the credits as the Dragon Girl.
Oh,
so, you know.
Yikes.
Mr. Wenk isn't woke enough.
No. Not for that. I mean, they could have given her a name. My God.
Well,
name her Beth. Get on with it.
This isn't to defend it. But,
okay, Steve.
but let's be clear, though. They are all working at like a strip club.
Maybe so, that was her own name she gave herself as in the strip club.
Yeah. So, I mean, like it's like, is it like super woke? No. But is it like crazy to be like, oh, an Asian girl at a strip club is named the Dragon Girl?
I always hated stripper names because they always just seem out of my price range. You got like your diamonds, your sapphires,
crystal.
Your rubies, crystal. Like, where's one that just comes out and it's just like, my name's Velcro. I'll get stuck on you, baby.
Pubic zirconia.
That would be a good drag name. You know, they love puns. So.
Oh, that is a good one.
It's true.
Yeah.
No, but
we have some drag fans. I would love that.
I always wanted to be, if I was going to do drag, to Stank Cave a JJ.
I know. I feel like you would want to do drag.
I don't, because you drunkenly put makeup on me before
after
the bars, and I did not have a good time with it.
Yes, you did. You looked really nice in the lipstick, and then I was putting mascara on him, and he wouldn't let me put a dress on him.
Yes.
He refused. I was like, come on.
I don't want to wear... It's nothing against people who want to wear dresses. I just don't... I don't got the body for a dress.
You need to be comfortable with your masculinity and your femininity, okay? I would put your pants on, but I got wide hips, so they wouldn't fit me.
That's fine.
I also did what to you?
You were telling me how they tuck and how they.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not pushing my testicles in any body cavity.
Well, Scott, what do you think they do?
I have pendulous scrot. This is. Yeah, I'm not getting any of this anywhere.
Yeah. You, yeah.
Yeah, see, I would never be able to tuck. I just have to hang loose.
You don't have the anatomical setup.
No.
For that. So, okay, you get a pass.
Thank you so much.
Wow, that was really cool.
it's just good that we can air our grievances during a podcast.
Yeah.
And to show how dysfunctional we really are.
Mini therapy sesh.
Continuing on with our cast, we have Dee Dee Pfeiffer as Amaretto / Allison. A chipper stripper that could be the love child of Madonna, the Bangles, and any of the numerous small pop groups that proliferated during the 80s. She is one of the very few dancers of the After Dark Club that is not, in fact, a vampire. She is the younger sister of Michelle Pfeiffer, and arguably the cuter of the two. Her career was not as prolific as her sister's, but she starred in numerous television roles, including Big Sky, which I guess is a big show on ABC.
Yeah, apparently. I don't watch that stuff.
I don't know. She was in the sitcom Sybil in the 90s with Sybil Shepherd. And she was in the cult classic film Falling Down, and I'm pretty sure her character's last name was Whamburger in that, if I'm remembering correctly. I haven't watched that movie. That's one of those movies where people watch it and they root for Kirk Douglas, just like people watch Wolf of Wall Street and root for Leonardo DiCaprio, not realizing that, you know, not the point.
Her character was annoying to me.
She was also, because we're going to have some Seinfeld facts in this episode, she's in the episode of Seinfeld called The Opposite, where George does the opposite, and when he approaches the woman at the bar and goes, "Hello, my name is George, I'm unemployed and live with my parents."
That's her?
That's her.
Oh my God.
I love having some Seinfeld facts to throw out, which is great because our next actor is Sandy Baron, who plays Vic. He's the shady part owner of the After Dark Club and thrall to Katrina, who desperately dreams of nothing more than owning a club in Vegas. He is portrayed by the late Sandy Baron, a well-loved character actor and comedian known for his work on The Mike Douglas Show. He also was, you know, when comedians would open up for singers, he opened up, I know, for Frank Sinatra a bunch of times. But he's best known to anybody from the 90s as Jack Klompas on Seinfeld. Jerry, I want you to have the pen. Take the pen! Take the pen, Jerry. Come on, I want you to have it.
He kept saying this the whole movie anytime he would come on.
Jerry, the car is no good. It's in a swamp.
His performance was fantastic. His whole vibe.
He's my favorite character in the movie.
Yeah, I would say so. Just the way he dressed when he ate the roach. Yeah. I was just like, I don't know. He did such a good job.
That's also a nice little vampiric throwback to Renfield eating roaches in the original Dracula. Sandy Baron was very, very cool in that movie. I was unsurprised to find out in my cursory googling so he was an old school Catskills Borscht Belt style Jewish comedian. He very much so comes off that way, especially with the fake velvet suit and the sort of over the top attitude.
That's why I like him, because
I'm a lot of velvet.
I think inside my soul I'm a Jewish woman. A Long Island Jewish woman.
Yeah, I would definitely say that's what your soul energy is for sure.
Yeah, I just love
all the kvetching at home.
I just love God. I love tackiness. I liked the tackiness of his character, and I like to be tacky.
This is correct. I have no funny retort. This is just true.
Okay, just putting it out there.
Just putting it out there.
I love velvet, even if it's fake.
How much velvet do we have in the house? I guess the fucking...
It's in the pod.
Yes, it's in the pod. The pod people. No, we got that fucking... Get that yellow chair upstairs, that's fucking velvet. We got the green couch, that's velvet. Mm-hmm. Pick a couch I can't even see.
Yeah. Sorry.
Nobody cares about this.
Oh my gosh.
Continuing on, we have Billy Drago as Snow, the albino gang leader. For some reason, there was an albino gang in this movie, which I was kind of all for.
I thought he was a vampire. I was confused.
Well, that's the bait and switch.
Oh, classic misdirection. What?
Yeah, and the girl with the fucked up teeth, that's the whole thing. It's like, oh, these are the vampires.
Oh, no. Yeah, because I was yelling at Scott. I was like, these are the vampires. And Scott's like, no, they're not. And I was like, yes, they are.
They're just poor people that were in a gang.
And then I got confused. And then I was like, oh, okay.
You were baited and summarily switched.
I sure was.
I love this. This is like literally, I've talked about this before, maybe on the podcast, but I definitely say it a lot whenever I watch 80s movies. My favorite 80s film trope is like the weird multiracial gang of quote unquote punks that like never displayed to have any sort of affinity for punk music.
Yeah.
It's like my favorite thing. And this is one of my, besides maybe the gang from Death Wish 3 specifically, I think that the like weird albino gang with like their black fucked tooth girlfriends are is like one of my favorite versions of like 80s gangs that have never ever existed in real life.
Yeah, I don't know how. I mean, that's got to be a very specific requirement. Like, you got to join our gang. You got to be either African American or you got to be albino.
Yeah, no in between.
Yeah, I really don't think there's that many albino people in that close proximity.
I've never met an albino person.
I went to school
that
with one.
I know of.
Yeah,
people used to call this kid albino, but he was not.
I'm sure, he just wasn't.
It
pale.
Was just. It was just mean, yeah.
No, oh, okay.
He was not actually albino.
Now, Billy Drago is in fact, or was in fact, not albino. He had a lot of makeup, and he did have his hair bleached, and his eyebrows bleached, ooh, and his eyelashes bleached for the role.
Eyelashes
is crazy.
Yeah. Do you know?
I don't even know how you safely do that.
Have either of you ever dyed your hair?
Yes.
Like with bleach? Like you bleached your hair?
I have bleached it.
Yes. Okay, so you know.
Yeah.
Like how it burns and smells and it's awful.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Imagine that by your
no, that's fucking
literal
diabolical.
Eye. They make, well, I guess back then they didn't. I mean, there's white mascara.
I got to imagine they made something for him because I can't imagine putting bleach near your eyes.
Well, clearly it said he did. You could have, they literally could have just painted them. Like,
they had to have done something. But anyway, Billy Drago, like I said, not an actual albino.
You telling me the internet might have lied?
I can't believe this.
I'm shocked.
We got to get down to this. Now, he's best remembered as an actor as Al Capone's assassin Frank Nitti in The Untouchables, which is a great movie, and Deputy Mather in Pale Rider. He did pass away not too long ago, I don't believe, but basically, always played the bad guy, including
he's
in a lot of bad, like, B-action movies.
He has a very sinister, chiseled face.
Yeah, Romany Gypsy Blood. I don't know if I'm allowed to say gypsy, but I'm going to say it again just to double down.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
no comment.
The funny thing I wanted to mention is that he's, like, 48 or something, or, like, at the time that movie was made.
Yeah, I think he would have been. Yeah, he was definitely in his 40s.
How old were they supposed to be portrayed? I couldn't figure that out. I was
they're
like,
street toughs.
I didn't
there
know
is
if they
no
were
age.
Supposed
you just
to
gotta
be
tough.
Yeah, you know,
and you gotta be street.
Kinda,
you gotta be from the street.
Yeah. Okay.
And last but not least, even though we could go on and on about the rest of the cast, we have Grace Jones as Katrina. Assumedly an ancient Nubian vampire queen and expressionistic dancer that is undoubtedly the most powerful of the undead in the After Dark Club. Eerily mute and prone to assailing those that disappoint her, she is the true owner of the club and the most terrifying when showing her true appearance. And holy fuck, the practical effects on her were great because she is terrifying when she's a vampire.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. I wasn't usually, well, maybe I'm used to more vampires that aren't so terrifying. And when I saw that, I was like, wait, ooh, that's cool. And I liked the nails, like that the hands changed.
I just appreciate a vampire movie where the vampires aren't hot and sexy and in leather.
Yeah. Like, well, they were at first.
Well, they were.
They were, no, they were hot to begin with. And then they.
But there's actually like
them.
A transformation that they're not just like.
They're not just, yeah.
My eyes
it's
are red.
It's not just their teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool.
She did accidentally, I believe, bite Robert Ressler with the fangs during the scene. So she did actually
I guess, technically vamp him.
Oh.
So that's kind of funny.
Nice. It's a legit movie.
It's legit now, yeah. Of course, Katrina is portrayed by the legendary Grace Jones, a Jamaican-born model, singer, actress, producer, and honorable member of the Order of Jamaica. She began her modeling career at the age of 13, and God knows what that could have done to her, given all the stuff that we know about the modeling
industry
now.
I have a fun fact about that.
Do you?
Yeah. It's not actually fun. It's terrible.
Okay.
It actually does. So on America's Next Top Model back in the day, people are starting to realize how, like, bad, like, yeah, Tyra Banks was. And I was, remember, I was rewatching it like 6 months ago. There's an episode where they changed the girls into iconic models and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, they picked Grace Jones, but the girl, she's not black. And they literally do blackface on America's Next Top because Grace Jones, she's very dark skinned.
Yeah.
And this girl, I mean, she might have been,
I don't think the girl's
skin tone was much lighter.
I don't think you can put anybody in blackface regardless if they have some melanin.
Sure, I don't know exactly what this girl's background was. However, I know they did have to paint her face many shades darker. And when I figured out that was Grace Jones, I was like, oh my God, that's the first thing that popped in my head. So look it up. It's real embarrassing. So.
Yeah, I'm sure America's Top Model was great for young teenage girls all around the world.
Oh, yeah, it really did something to me. A lot of emotional damage, so.
That's good.
Yep.
Who was the broad that was on that show that everybody hates?
Janice.
Dickinson?
Yeah.
Why the fuck do I know that? Dear God.
Surreal Life.
Oh, that's probably what it is, yeah.
That's why I knew her.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
That woman is a terrible human being.
For some reason, weirdly, America's Next Top Model is not canceled. But everything else. Saying, I don't know. Maybe they
it's about women.
Yeah. if there was like a bunch of white dudes on that show or something, there would be some justice.
It was concerning when I rewatched it. I said, oh, okay.
Yeah. So, wow. You watch terrible TV.
I sure. Yeah.
Ms. Jones became an icon through her modeling and was actually a big member of the kind of bringing forth the cross-dressing movement during the 80s. Not that it didn't happen before, but making it a little bit more mainstream. She very much was influential on the androgynous looking,
yeah,
too. Because she's very thin, she's muscular, she's got very
a more square face that tends to be associated, yeah, as a masculine feature.
Yeah. She was as a performance artist, she began her career during the late 70s, starting in disco, but moved into various other genres, including funk, reggae, post-punk, new wave, industrial, electronic, and even gospel through her career as a musician.
Look, you go, girl.
Again, fucking legendary.
Yeah.
And her acting career began in 1973 with Ozzie Davis's blaxploitation film Gordon's War, and the blaxploitation film actually starring and put together by people who actually are black.
Oh, good.
Okay. Early blaxploitation films were not like that. Mm. And then from there, she would kind of intermingle her music with her modeling and her acting, but she did star in about 20 films, including one of my favorite sequels, Conan the Destroyer. She played Zula, and she's in the final Roger Moore Bond film, A View to Kill, as henchwoman Mayday.
Oh.
Now, if you want to watch a really bad Bond film, A View to Kill is right there with it.
Okay.
Because you have Christopher Walken playing a villain who's supposed to be a Nazi Superman.
For some reason
is dating Mayday, who is a very, very, very dark-skinned woman.
Christopher Walken dates Grace Jones in this movie?
Yeah, but
that's amazing. I just need to see that.
If you want to watch Bond films, we can do that. You can realize how ridiculously bad most of them are.
Yeah, okay. they all suck.
They all suck, but they're fun. I'll take sucking fun out of... Oh, God, that was
really... That sounded real bad in my ear.
Give me some sucking fun. I'm just going to keep
sucking
going.
Sucking fun.
Co-starring with Jones would be A View to Kill, not in this, would be Swedish actor Dolph Lundgren, who she dated for 4 years and is known, like I said, for his ability to smell crime.
Children?
No, they did not have
any
children.
I would have loved to see what that kid looked like.
Right.
They're both so... like, have just very prominent features each.
There is out there. They did a nude photo shoot together. The most boring looking kid born ever. Oh yeah.
It doesn't surprise you.
Pudgy kid.
I mean, young Dolph Lundgren, in my opinion, is one of the most beautiful men to have ever existed.
Oh hell yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna look him up and while you keep talking.
I mean, come on, he was Ivan Drago, for fuck's sake.
I'm going to look up Young.
You know, Ivan Drago, who's, you know, in the best Rocky movie, which is Rocky IV.
Again, make sure to type in Beautiful Young into Google.
Okay, I will.
Beautiful Young.
I literally
Dolph
am.
Dolph Lundgren.
Dolph Lundgren.
Now, the fun fact with Dolph Lundgren involved in this movie is that on the very interesting chair she's dancing on, it was actually a body cast of Dolph Lundgren.
That's why it's so huge and yoked.
Very yoked.
Oh my god, he's stunning,
right? It's people don't really think about it. He was like,
and they both had square hair in the 80s.
Oh look,
yeah,
they look nice together.
Yeah, they did a nude photo shoot together. That's actually like very, very beautiful and well done. Believe it or not,
they're just both so beautiful.
Now the art design that Jenna was kind of thrown off by.
Well, this was before one. I knew it was her. Okay, I did not know. It was the hair that was problematic for me. It was freaking me out.
It really ruins your Ronald McDonald fetish.
I just wish the hair was maybe a little long. The cut wasn't great. Maybe a little longer. Could have still been large and, you know.
You're just making hand gestures I know. At me. You're like throwing hair at me?
Can't the people hear my hand gestures?
I hope so.
It needed to be longer or shorter. I didn't like the length. That's just my opinion.
I think it's interesting that, you know, we were talking about the various woke aspects of this movie, but then we have, like, the main centerpiece of this movie is the most offensive thing that you can ever see in the world, which is whiteface.
Is that, I wasn't sure if...
I don't know if we can allow whiteface.
Is that a thing,
no.
First of all?
No, Jenna, fuck.
It's literally fine.
Like,
no, I'm not saying it wasn't fine. I'm asking if people think that's a thing. I don't think it's a thing. I'm asking if people out there think that's
okay.
A thing.
Well, listen, okay. Yeah, if you're like a mime, then there's whiteface.
I'm not an idiot, Steve. My God.
I'm sorry. I'm not sorry about that. I'm sorry that I think the reality is that there probably are like white people who are like, we need to stop the proliferation of whiteface. And it's like they have no examples of it besides
what?
Yeah, people
what
that complain
she...
about whiteface also have very yellow teeth, so maybe they should work on the teeth before they worry about the face.
Yeah.
Fair point. What was she doing? Was she just trying to make herself look like the chair? Like, was it supposed to be an art installation of sorts?
So the design of the chair and all of her outfit, which was hand-painted on her, was done by her longtime friend, Keith Haring. Now, if you don't know who Keith Haring is, he was a pop graffiti artist who was very political. Okay. He was recognized during, really before this, but during the height of the AIDS epidemic. Mm-hmm. He was obviously an out gay man. If you look up his art on your phone, you'll recognize exactly what it is.
So it was his art on her body.
Yeah.
Yes.
And also on the chair. And if you saw that and you're like, oh, that looks a lot like the A Very Special Christmas album covers, that's because it's the same guy.
Yeah. You'll pop it up and you'll see it. This is actually one of my favorite things about this movie is that, besides the lighting, is that there's these really ostentatious, busy...
Okay, I'm familiar with this. I just didn't know. Okay.
There's like these big ostentatious like set pieces. Actually, I think one of my favorite parts of the movie besides the dancing is the hotel they end up at, where it's got this really busy floor and it's shot to make it look very big. But the rest of the room is really unremarkable. It's dirty. It's dingy. That's like one of the best parts of how the cinematography was done in this movie and the set design was that you go from scenes of really, really bright, kind of garishly clown colors, which was intentional, obviously, but everything around it's dirty,
dingy,
and dingy and like wet and gross. But then you have these big, busy set pieces that kind of take your eye, but not everything's like that. Yeah. Listen when I talk sometimes.
Yeah,
that's so
sometimes.
Nice.
I actually have been like you lately. So
I can tell.
Okay.
Let's keep that up.
All right.
Well, I don't like any of that anymore.
Okay. So So, I want to hear Jenna's thoughts, like, fully about this, because this is probably the last movie you're going to enjoy this month, so I want you to really take it in.
I really liked this movie, honestly. Like, at first, I was kind of like, where's this going? Like, I mean, like, I knew...
You were not expecting it to be a comedy
at all. No, that's why I was like, where's this going? Because I didn't know. You never tell me anything about it. You're just like, this is what we're watching. And I don't look anything up because I like to be surprised. But it was so... It was very well done. It's really funny in, like, the right moments. But it wasn't funny, like, oh, then... Like, you know, stuff's funny because then it's, like, cheaply done. It wasn't like that at all. It just, like, had that 80s humor to it. Mm-hmm. And the only qualm that I had was I just wish there was a little more backstory to possibly Katrina, Grace Jones' character, or just a little more backstory of, like, the vampires in general. Kind of, like, maybe why they're there. Just a tad. I know that wasn't, like, the whole point of the movie.
I'm just kind of wondering if she knew.
I just was curious.
Strippers that made them vampires, or she just like did she convince the vampires to become strippers? Like,
that's what I wanted to know. Because then why did they hire an outsider stripper?
Right.
Well, yeah, because they got like, the Asian
were they,
girl.
Were they waiting
Amaretto.
To make her a vampire? You know, that's where I was kind of like, well, what is it? But I guess that's not the point of the movie, and I shouldn't care about that. But. That was my only thing.
No, it's a valid point, and
that
I think,
was my only thing.
And I think that it kind of plays into a couple of the things that I like about it too, which ironically enough, I like the very mysterious kind of surreal nature of the movie. So there's like things like that, like wanting to know like the backstory of like. Of all that stuff where all of a sudden now it's like, oh, everyone's a vampire and whatnot. And it feels very dangerous and very, I keep using it, but very like surreal, very like fish out of water. And part of that is the lighting. Like it's not just lighting in the club. It's lighting like all over once they are in this side of town. Like when they're outside of the club, it's like, there's two buildings in the distance that both just have like flat green and pink spotlights on them. Like everything about the atmosphere is completely absurdist. And some of this plays into what Scott mentioned before, which is there is a clear cut influence from the Anne Rice books and this kind of allusion to Katrina being like some sort of like Nubian or Egyptian like vampire queen is a direct reference to like the Queen of the Damned book, which is what then became a movie, the movie with Aaliyah.
I love that movie.
Right. And like that's like a reference to like that concept, which is kind of born out of that. So yeah, like there is like kind of like this like I kind of want more for like from what the movie like kind of in the same boat as you, Jenna. I like the way that this movie kind of like tantalizes that there's like a deeper, weirder thing going on. It feels almost like a like horror version of like a movie like After Hours or like even like Good Time. You know, that kind of like there's like a weird. It doesn't have as much of the frenetic pacing, but it has very much so like this, like something is happening to me that's taking place like out of time almost. Like it's so surreal and like crazy.
I like the way they transition into this weirdness where it's legitimately they almost get in a car accident. The car just spins around and they end up
like
magically in the wrong side of town. Yeah. And then you just see like a gate cross, like they're being trapped in there.
Yeah.
And then it just immediately goes from like, college comedy, let's get some broads and get to the frat house to like, oh shit, we're about to get stabbed while eating at a diner while the guy's leaving dressed as a priest because he's terrified that apparently this part of town is full of vampires.
Right, then like, why live there, my guy? That was my first thought. I was like, move, you weirdo.
That guy's the Charlie of like diner owners where he just won't give up.
You know how I am though, like, that's the problem for me. Like, Steve is like, they probably planned it that way, you know, that to make it, you know, not dive in and whatnot. And I'm sure they did, but like, I question everything. I can't help it. Well, Scott knows, like, when we watch things, I'm like, what is this? What's that? Da-da-da-da-da. Like,
I watch The Sopranos with you every time. Wait, what's happening?
Yeah, I'm just like, that's my, like, energy, so I can't help it.
Well, they kind of trick you at the beginning of this movie, though, when we see them during this really ridiculous college hazing where you think they're
I was like, that's a dead person. And then I was like, damn, they got me. They got me this whole movie.
Yeah, college hazings are way worse than this. It's usually like, you know, playing ookie cookie with a bunch of guys, except it's you playing by yourself with one cookie.
One time my friend told me when he was like joining a frat or something that they made him put a pine cone up his butt. I was like, literally, what are you talking about?
Listen,
if that's real,
let us know. Secret societies
are
important, all right?
If you have ever had a pine cone put up your butt in a frat, please email us.
But
tweet us.
It's interesting that you say that, though, not the pine cone ass thing, the other stuff. because it's like there is this aspect, right, with like a lot of things where it's a double-edged sword. Like you put enough info there where you want to be like, hey, I want to know more. And like that's good. Like it makes you invested and interested. But then, like, there's this other aspect where if they did put more, and it's like, oh, well, that wasn't very interesting at all.
Yeah. And maybe they didn't want to take away from, like, the comedic parts of it, you know? Because, like, it was more of a comedy than a thriller or whatever you want to call it. So maybe they thought going too far deep into that would take away from that.
Yeah. I mean, they do balance it out. I think the only kind of gripe I do have with this movie is that it does start off really funny. It's funny throughout, but it does kind of like dip
a little bit,
and then it kind of comes back, like when AJ reappears, like in the sewer at the end. Like I was kind of hoping we'd see him before, but like when he takes out the steak, he's like, "For Micah, go figure."
That
you know,
was hilarious. Yeah. What a line.
Yeah, you know what? It kind of like falls into the same kind of problem that like both the original and the remake of Fright Night have, which is, you know, the problem with the horror or really with any horror comedy, but I think about them because obviously they're also vampires. There will come a point where there has to be the resolution of the plot, and like 9 times out of 10 that's just not going to be funny. So you end up with like a third act for the most part that's just like ends up unfunny. Like, you're going to end up with, like, a whole unfunny third act.
I think the only saving grace is that Didi Pfeiffer is kind of that comedic part of it.
Yeah,
but
I feel like that was the point, but she really annoyed me.
Really?
Yeah,
I thought she was kind of cute and funny.
I don't know. I was getting annoyed by her because I need to know stuff. And I was like,
you hate other women.
Yeah, classic women tearing down women.
I was just like, just tell us how you know him. That because I'm a nosy and I like needed to know, and it was driving me nuts.
But I find it realistic because there are psychotic women out there that like will remember a stupid fact about women.
Yeah, that sounds like something I would do. Yeah. Maybe that's why it annoyed me so much.
Did you see a little bit of yourself in Amaretto?
No, she was way nicer than me. I would have left a million years ago. And I would be a terrible stripper. Like,
you've got titanium rods in your back. You are not going to be able to. You could be the pole.
I could be the pole.
Yeah.
But I couldn't dance around it.
No. And you are way too accident prone for us to ever attempt that.
I'm not allowed to wear heels. So unless anyone's into girls with rods in their back that wear flats, that can't arch their back. But that's like the number one requirement of being a stripper is an arched back. That's how they stick out the boobies.
Well, they don't call it the beast with many backs for nothing there, Jenna. What I do appreciate, though, about the strip club, even though it's a really dirty mess, is that unfortunately, I have been to a strip club a couple times with beer distributors that happened to bring me.
Even make a face.
No, I'm just
this
saying.
This was pre-us dating. I can't get mad.
I just want to say, I've never gone to a strip club by myself. That's really gross.
Yeah, that's...
That's sad.
Yeah. And that's why they were doing the Lord's work.
Yeah.
They were getting rid of the creeps.
That is true,
that's
isn't
what
it?
He said. Yeah. Remember, he said, these are the loners, the bad guys,
I guess Vic's really not that bad of a guy.
I kind
of
was like, all right.
But the point I'm going to make is if you stay at a strip club long enough, they do turn the lights on.
Ooh.
And I don't care if it's a young stripper or old stripper, they will run like cockroaches from the light as soon as those lights get up, because if anybody sees those C-section scars, it does ruin the magic pretty quickly.
My God. Maybe they're just sweaty.
Well, that too.
You just get up there, and we'll see.
I don't know. I'll do it.
Honestly,
I won't do it in a dress of makeup, but I'll shake.
Might be pretty good. Now that I'm thinking about it.
Get me a thong. We'll practice.
All right.
All right.
Put it on my to-do list.
Ladies' night. Ghoul Daddy's swinging his sack.
Steve, do you want me to get you guys matching thongs and you can wear them together? What are they called? Banana hammocks?
Banana hammocks, yeah.
Yeah. Groovy little spook show banana hammock.
Okay, we should sell those, but I'm never going to wear one.
All right. That's.
I don't even know. We'd have to get like a really like custom fitted size because the balls are just obscene. Like, it's just. God bless me with a small brain, but just.
Did you say you can poke them out the side?
Yeah.
That I'm picturing that, and I'm not liking it.
Jenna, as you do know, I can do the snail and the hamburger.
Yeah. I'm so glad I know this about you.
That is how
I lured puppetry of the penis?
Oh, yeah.
Puppetry of the penis.
Puppetry of the penis.
What can you do any tricks, Steve?
Oh, I have a woefully small penis.
Listen, if there's one thing I've learned growing up with HBO randomly through my life is that it's through real sex, which is not on HBO Go, by the way.
I looked it up too. It's fucked up.
What's real sex? Is that a show?
Oh, okay. Real sex was like the documentary portion of like late night sexcapades on HBO besides like Taxi Cab Confessions. And it'd be like, in this episode, we're going to the dildo factory and you're watching like migrant women in like these like hair nets and stuff, like injecting purple like liquid to like make the veins and the fake dicks look good, and like they're like taking them out of the moles, and there's like another episode where it's literally just a bunch of old people talking about their masturbation habits.
Oh,
it's not like sexy at all, but when you're like 12 and you are desperate to see half a titty.
Oh, I just want to, that sounds interesting. And funny.
Well, we can't watch it because HBO Go apparently doesn't want to put that on there.
Fuck you, HBO Go.
But they'll put Real Time of Bill Maher on there. Not real sex with dildos.
How rude.
Also, Taxi Cab Confessions is also not on HBO Go.
Oh, my God.
This is just a gripe about HBO Go at this point. It's $15 a month. Really doesn't seem worth it.
No, if it doesn't have that on there, absolutely not.
I mean, it's worth it alone right now for Righteous Gemstones and Peacemaker.
We haven't watched anything yet because Jenna was sick with the COVIDs for like a week and a half, and we haven't finished The Sopranos, and she's doing typical Jenna behavior.
I don't have any typical behaviors.
Because we get to an end of a show, and there'll be like half a season left, and she doesn't want it to end, so she just says, let's watch something else.
When I go into therapy, I'm going to ask my therapist what's wrong with me that I do that. Because that has to be like a trauma response or something. Or I'm just
neurotic.
For most shows, I just will not. Never watch the last episode of New Girl. Refuse. I don't want it to end. Then I just start it over.
It's like, you're terminally stupid as hell.
Ma'am, the chart doesn't lie. Fuck.
I will finish Sopranos.
Yes, you have no choice.
Because I want to watch the movie, so.
Yes.
So I will.
But you kind of really need to finish The Sopranos to know.
Yes, I will. I'm so sorry that I got COVID. It was not by choice, okay? It was an accident.
You're like the one bitch on the planet that didn't just only watch TV when she got COVID.
What did I don't think I.
You like laid in just like a pile of used Kleenexes. Like a 12-year-old, and just like I'd come in and be like, how you doing? And you'd just be like,
I honestly felt like caca. Like it was terrible. It was, I don't know, like how people like unvaccinated do it. Like they're, because I'm all of, I got them all.
Well,
and
they
I
don't do
like
it for
shit.
Very long. That's the thing.
Well, that's, I guess that's the truth. It sucked. I had no energy. I felt like I was in like, a depressive episode, but also sick as hell. Because I didn't want to eat. I didn't want to look, do anything I like to do. Like, I didn't catch up on any shows. I didn't want to laugh. I couldn't cry either. It was bad. So,
I didn't want to laugh.
I didn't want to cry.
Feeling,
is this a Sylvia Plath poem or something?
Oh, my God. I'm feeling much better, though. Thank you for your concern.
Yes, yes.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
I'm concerned. Okay. Parting thoughts?
I like this movie a lot. It's really fun. I think it's one of those prime examples of sometimes you just have like a good movie. It's interesting in a lot of ways that I think if you look at reviews from the time, it wasn't given credit for.
It was not really well received.
Probably because of the white face.
Absolutely. Roger Ebert hated it.
But I think...
literally, yeah.
I think it's one of those things where if it stands, you know, it stands out among the other shittier movies of the time when you really hold it in comparison. So I actually gave it 3.5 out of 5 and I enjoyed it. So I definitely recommend this one. It's one of my favorite non-serious horror movies. I don't know if you want to call it a horror comedy because, like I said, it drops the comedy for a large portion, but it's a lot of weird and very interesting things in this movie between Grace Jones's performance, which of course, I know we mentioned it last episode when we were giving the lead in, but you know, she never speaks throughout the entirety of the movie.
Yeah.
She
just shrieks
at the end. That's like the last. Oh, and no, the ending too. We didn't talk about that.
Yeah. For me, IMDb 3.5. Having watched, I'm not a big fan of vampire movies. I watched this, and a couple months ago, I watched After Dark. And I would have to say, if I had to watch one or the other ever again, I would pick this 99 times out of 100. Because unlike After Dark, that has the sappy romantic endings and all that bullshit that I really can't stand, this was funny. I love the art style and the direction of this movie. The acting for being
Do you mean Near Dark? Or is there a different
Near Dark, okay. I'm sorry, yeah.
Well, that's fucked up. Near Dark is like a perfect movie. Yeah.
Oh, I had fun with Near Dark, but man, that ending is fucking blows. I hate sappy romantic bullshit like that. But yeah. We'll cover that movie one day
feelings
for sure.
Feelings, sickening.
Yeah, feelings are gross, first off.
Near Dark's one of my favorite movies.
But yeah, I really think this tapped into that, like, 80s, I don't know, like, teen college comedies that are, like, maybe not aged well, but are always fun to watch. You know, your Meatballs, your Ghostbusters, any movie of Bill Murray, Stripes, you know. It's just kind of timeless in that respect. I thought everybody that was in this was really fun to watch. I was kind of shocked how much I really did like Chris Makepeace, because I'm not like the biggest fan of his, and he didn't really do a whole lot. I mean, for films that I've seen with him, Billy Drago is always cool to see as a villain. Just overall, 3.5, super fun. This will probably be on my like yearly rotation now for sure.
Like to watch this once a year.
Yeah.
I forgot to download the app because.
Oh, you're Letterboxd?
I'm an idiot. But when I do it, I also would give it a 3.5.
Wow. We actually all agreed on a movie for the first time.
Wow. It'll never happen again.
No, it will probably not. Especially now while we end this month.
Yeah. Oh my God. I really hate you guys. Want to throw that out there.
So, well, we cover some more interesting things now. Next week, Steve is going to pick the film. Steve, have you picked the film yet?
I haven't.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to pick it right now. Hold on.
Right now, he's going to pull it out of a hat.
Well, he pulls something out of the hat. We will have the Patreon going up not in... the week beginning the 14th, so February 14th.
Valentine's Day,
yeah.
Buy it for your significant other.
I am just kind of putting the finishing touches of how to do the tiers. I want to send it to Steve so he can make sure it looks not ridiculous. So you'll have, obviously, the show that you're listening to now. It's completely available no matter what. It won't be behind a paywall. You will always get Groovy Little Spook Show, but I have a kind of fun interview series I am doing called Schlocked and Loaded. I am interviewing fan of the show and adult exploitation comic artist Barbados. I've
we're going to do about a 6-part series on his comic, Sad Sack, which has been really fun. While we talk about, obviously, the adult nature of it, it's been a very kind of long, winding conversation about actual censorship of art and what is and isn't protected by First Amendment speech. It's been very interesting seeing it from the artist's point of view. I have a lot of things lined up for that. We're going to have another artist with Sus, which is their comic group, on probably in a couple months there. We've got a couple authors coming on that I've set up. I'm leaving kind of some of them secret, but there's going to be a whole lot of interviews with that coming out. And then me and Steve will do probably like a couple bonus episodes that we're calling After Hours for now. That's kind of not horror related, and us probably
just playing Halo and talking.
It's just going to be us playing Halo and talking, except there will be a lot more screaming for me. So,
great.
But there's going to be stuff for you guys. You'll get Discord access. There's a whole lot. We're trying to make it very fairly priced because we do want you guys to obviously get access.
Banana hammocks.
Banana hammocks. We want you to make sure you get the banana hammocks. But no, seriously, we're going to fairly price it because we know we have fans of the show now. We want to make sure you guys get the bang for your buck. But it's also not something that's completely ridiculous like some things I've seen. So that is coming in 2 weeks. Steve, did you find your movie you want to do yet, or are you still on?
I have while I was tempted to make us just do Silver Bullet again.
Wait, is that the
that's the one of Gary Busey? You haven't watched that?
Oh,
one.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a powerful part of me that just wanted to be like, yeah, well, we should do that again. I'm between a couple, to be honest, and I do want to decide now. You know what? Let's go. Yeah, this is what I want to do. Okay. We're gonna go into the realm of the artsy fartsy, and we're gonna go with When Animals Dream.
When Animals Dream, I have no idea.
Yeah, Scott's face was like, I don't even know.
Yeah, it's a Danish movie. It stars.
I love a cheese Danish.
It stars Mads Mikkelsen's brother.
Okay.
And yeah, that's what we're going with.
Because Lamb was so well received, we should definitely do An Animal's Dream now. Where can people find that if they want to watch it before the show?
Fuck, I
need
remember.
To know. Oh, great.
Oh, my God. Come to class prepared.
It's a movie I watched a few years ago, and I'm like, hey, we should watch it again. You can rent it on YouTube or Vudu for $4.
Okay, YouTube, $4. So if you really want to not spend your $4 on the Patreon, you can spend it to watch the movie on YouTube so you know what the fuck we're talking about next week. That's okay. I'm all for artsy fartsy. That will juxtapose this week and for sure how we end the week. And I'm kind of interested to see what Jenna picks. If she just randomly finds something.
How? I will do research for blood, 15 minutes.
Blood, breasts, or beast. And I will say, if you want to pick striptease.
I'm going for boobs here.
Okay.
Boobs forever. I love boobs.
I know you do.
I'm a big boob fan because I don't have big boobs. So I love big boobs.
We're definitely getting striptease then.
Yeah.
Which is truly a horrific movie, but.
Well, I'm picking it. So
yeah.
We'll do what I want.
Okay, Steve, where do we find you on the internet?
Find me at Rude Speaker on all the things. I make good tweets. I play Halo on Twitch sometimes when I remember to. That's really it. Yeah, follow me on Twitter. That's the main thing. I make funny stuff happen. And I've been losing followers because I haven't been tweeting that much. So maybe if you follow me, I'll start tweeting again. Otherwise, we'll continue the steady decline.
Yeah, I thought today you did pretty good.
Today I've been trying to make a comeback. Mounting my comeback.
See, I use Twitter specifically just to put all the tiny thoughts in my head out in public and then realize, wow, I'm a fucking moron. If you want to see that, though, you can do so at the Ghoul Daddy, D-A Ghoul Daddy on the Twitter. Anywhere else, if you find me on the internet, fuck off. For anything related to the show, you can find it at Groovy Little Pod on the Facebooks, on the Instagrams, on the Twitter. Obviously, you'll know what's going on there with the show, so that's pretty much the only reason to follow it, but we use it back and forth from then. If you are inclined to be a horror fan, which you should be because you're listening to this, I am now one of the editors for The Mutant Fam on Twitter. Not only do I want you to check out The Mutant Fam, which is obviously related to Joe Bob Briggs and The Last Drive-In, if you think you have an idea for some content and like to join the team, you should message us because we're looking for additional people. We've got just a couple people editing, but it's been pretty fun so far. Everyone's behaving mostly on the internet, at least on that side. Besides that, Jenna, where do we find you? Do we want to find you? We probably don't want to find
you. Anymore.
Not anymore.
No.
No, because you started your job today, so you have to be professional.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So next week, when animals dream and stay groovy, I guess.
Everyone's gonna love this.
Oh God.